Governor, if I can begin by asking you, you've expressed your opposition to the expansion of Medicaid in the state of Georgia, as envisaged by this Affordable Care Act. Why your opposition?
Well, first of all, I think we have to understand that Medicaid is an entitlement program. It is a combination of federal and state money that goes into it. Depending on the poverty level of the state, the federal participation varies. But even though the federal government is offering to pay 100% of the cost for the first 3 years, it will decline after that. We estimate that it will cost the state of Georgia billions of dollars over the course of that period of time, even though the initial period will be paid for by the federal government. Plus the fact that being an entitlement program, it really doesn't matter what the state's budget calls for in terms of Medicaid cost. If it exceeds that, we will be required to pay that extra, even though our budget does not contemplate it.
What I don't quite understand, though, is that for the first 3 years, there's no obligation for you to continue in this program after 3 years. For the first 3 years, essentially, you're being given free money. I mean, this is federal funds, which, if you don't claim, will just go elsewhere.
Well, you know, that's the old gimmick. Have you ever seen anybody be given something for free and then elected officials be willing to take it away from them?
But this is, I mean, this is written into law, isn't it?
Well, it is, but the practical result of that is the federal government is saying, your state is the one who's now deciding that this benefit you have received for the last 3 years will no longer be available to you. They put the political pressure back on the states to make that decision and claim no responsibility at the federal level. That's just not playing by a set of rules that works.
Even so, even after the 3 years, I mean, if you were to take part in this and then to continue on with it, again, from what I understand, federal funds would account for 90% of this expansion. So for every 10 cents the state of Georgia puts in, it would never be more than that in the dollar that you'd have to find. The federal funds would account for 90%. You're smiling.
Forgive me for being a skeptic, having spent a little over 17 years in the United States Congress. I know how difficult it is for the federal government to try to come up with those dollars. Even though they don't have to worry because they can print dollars, they are running deficits every year. And this is a promise by the federal government. It is not an actuality because it has to be put into federal budgets every year.
What would you say to somebody like, we spoke to a 46-year-old nanny called Ellen who earned $11,000 last year. She says that she feels a heel because she had to go to the emergency room when she had asthma. She says she has a history of breast cancer in her family, and she frankly fears going for her annual breast screens because she says if she were diagnosed with cancer, she has no coverage. She doesn't qualify for Medicaid. She would under this expansion, but she says she feels she has absolutely nowhere to turn.
Well, you know, if the federal government thinks that that is a responsibility to cover single adults without children in a category that is above the federal poverty level that the states have established.
Well, I think she's actually on or just below the federal poverty level. She earned $11,000 last year. But my question to you is essentially that given that you do have this option of, as I say, 3 years, a pilot program, I mean, no obligation. You say it might be politically awkward, but for 3 years you could give somebody like Ellen peace of mind.
So then you give her 3 years of cancer treatment and then you say, well, we're not going to give you any further treatment? That doesn't make a whole lot of sense. If you think it's easy to reform an entitlement program, look at the history of the welfare program in the United States. It took decades on top of decades to fix a program that everybody acknowledged was broken, and it was almost impossible to do so. The same will be true and perhaps even more magnified in terms of Medicaid to reform it in the future.
You say that there's just a basic financial argument here. There are those who say, well, actually, let's turn that on the head. If you sort out people who don't have any access to basic medical care now, you deal with absenteeism, you stop hospitals having to deal with uncompensated costs. In other words, patients just turning up and not being able to afford to pay their fees. You prevent people waiting until they have dangerous, perhaps deadly conditions before they turn up in hospital. Actually, you'll end up saving money.
Well, that's some people's argument. Mostly it's coming from those who would receive that money, not from anyone else. And the difficulty with that, of course, is that you're talking about a population group that currently is not eligible. They're not under any program now unless they qualify through their employer's health insurance program. And that is the number one way that most people have gotten health insurance throughout the years. When the federal government decided they would incentivize employers to offer health insurance, this program, the Affordable Care Act, does the exact opposite. It puts pressure on employers, and we're already seeing the evidence that we will see a reduced number of individuals being insured through their employer, which has always been the primary method of getting health insurance. It is having the exact opposite effect from what I think it was intended to do.
There's an economist at Georgia State University, William Custer, who's done an academic study into the possible expansion of Medicaid to 500,000 Georgians. He says it would bring in 70,000 new jobs, add more than $8 billion in economic activity, and bring in $40 billion of federal funds to Georgia over the decade. That's quite a lot to turn your back on.
Well, you know, I've always seen academics who simply look at the appearance of what appears to be good and not the practicality of it. This is going to be money that they presume is going to go into a healthcare system. But now let me ask you to ask the same question of providers in my state or in any state. Ask them who is the lowest cost provider of healthcare. Is it private insurance? No. Is it Medicare? No. It is always Medicaid. And almost all of them will tell you that the reimbursement rate is below their actual cost. So if you're saying, let's expand paying people below the cost of care because that's going to fix something, that doesn't make a whole lot of economic sense to me, and I'm not an economist.
Let me ask you about what some other Republican state governors have decided to do or are looking at doing with this Medicaid expansion. They're unsure about it themselves, but in Philadelphia, in Iowa, in Arkansas, they're looking at using the money that the federal government is saying they'd make available for Medicaid expansion to allow these poor people to buy health insurance, to subsidize their health insurance premiums. Is that something that you would consider?
Well, that was one of the options that was suggested when I was a member of Congress on the Health Subcommittee of Energy and Commerce, was to allow to use part of the revenue to subsidize people buying in to the private health insurance marketplace. It was rejected at the federal level at that time. I am going to be watching because I am very skeptical that the federal government is now going to allow those kinds of changes in position. If they're going to allow those kind of changes in position, they need to go back to Congress and put them into statute and not simply try to do it by regulation.
Do you think it's a good idea, though?
I've always thought that it is preferable for people to buy into the private insurance marketplace rather than being a part of a true government entitlement program, yes.
So this is something that you would consider for Georgia?
I will watch that. I am very skeptical. But if you put it under the umbrella of an entitlement program, then you're locked into all of those things that I've talked about before.
Let me ask you about something that's due to kick in just under 2 weeks, which is the start of these health insurance exchanges, these sort of marketplaces run by individual states where people can ideally get the best price health insurance policies as insurance companies compete with each other. You've said you want Georgia to have no part of this. Why?
Well, I think I've joined about 33 other governors in saying that as well. Well, first of all, we were interested in setting up a state exchange. We started that process. At the time, there were no guidelines. We could set it up as we chose. Very quickly thereafter, the federal government started putting out regulations, And we finally realized that this would have been an exchange in state name only. It would have been federally directed. And I think that's what the other 34 states in all that apparently have not decided to set up state exchanges have also concluded.
Well, you say federally directed. I mean, the principle is pretty simple, though, isn't it? I mean, I don't know what the situation is here in the U.S., but, for example, in the U.K., if I want to buy car insurance or house insurance, I can go to these comparison websites. I tap in my details, I say the sort of cover I want, and the insurance companies compete to give me the best price. That just sounds pretty simple. Sounds like the free market in operation. What's not to like?
Well, I think we can do that now. It's just that in order to be on that exchange, you have to do exactly what the federal government tells you you have to do in terms of offering of benefits, and you have very little flexibility.
Well, it's just setting standards, isn't it?
Beg pardon?
It's just setting standards, isn't it? It's just saying they have to meet these sorts of requirements.
There's a difference between saying you're setting standards and using what we use, the word mandates. It is saying you mandate that this is what must be covered. This has traditionally always been the responsibility of individual states to say what their mandates for insurance coverage will be in their state. And they vary from state to state. Now, this is a federally imposed mandate on every state.
But aren't they just saying, look, there are basic minimum standards here, and essentially what's at play here is that you're offering to help constituents through the insurance jungle, and you're spreading risk. The more people who get involved in this, presumably, the lower the premiums. I mean, again, that's the way the market works. Just listening to what you're saying, it's sounding like you're objecting to the principle of Washington interference, but the practice...
Your question embodies the point of view of a country that has embraced the federal government or the federal agencies having every say-so, as opposed to my point of view, which is a free market point of view. It is the point of view that has made the United States strong, and I am one of those that will resist the federal government taking over things that have traditionally been the responsibility and the obligation of states to set standards and not the federal government. That's the difference between our government here in the United States and yours in Great Britain.
Can I just ask you one more question, which
sure.
is... There is a move by some in Congress, some Republicans in Congress, to defund Obamacare, as they put it, to stop the federal funds going towards the Affordable Care Act actually working. Is that something that you would support?
I would definitely support it because I think it is a misconceived idea. I was there when it was rammed through Congress. Anytime that you have a piece of major legislation that does not receive a single vote from the minority party, as this was the case, that is an indication there's something seriously wrong with it.
But the problem with defunding is that it's not just about defunding this particular act. It's about, essentially, as it's an amendment to the whole government funding program, it's about stopping government altogether.
Well, since we haven't had a federal budget in 2 years, we've operated on continuing resolutions. My understanding is they're proposing to build that in as a condition of additional continuing resolutions to keep the government open. I'm not in Congress now. I'm a governor, and I will trust the judgment of the federal authorities to make those kind of decisions. They are very difficult decisions, but many of them, I think, feel that this is the last opportunity they have to get a real handle on trying to deal with a problem that has been created by this administration, by this piece of legislation that is obviously unworkable.